Good morning. You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Hooligan. You can read my columns at LasVegasSun.com. My co-host, as always, Las Vegas Sun reporter Tovin Lapan. As the every other year legislative session winds down, with just 2 weeks to go in the 120-day session, we'll spend some time talking about it during the next few weeks. Join us to talk about legislative issues out of the Sun's Capitol Bureau up in Carson. Our man in Carson, Andrew Doman. Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Andrew, from my vantage point, having watched three sessions prior to this one and in the past pretty closely, this one looks particularly dysfunctional to me. It just seems like a lot of major legislation hasn't moved. The whole thing seems a lot more sort of last minute, ad hoc, and thrown together than usual, and which is saying quite a bit because the process is usually defined that way. And Jeanette Damon, your colleague and boss, had a piece over the weekend about this. And I know this is your second session, but I'm sure you're also in conversations with some legislative veterans up there. Am I wrong from my vantage point, 450 miles away?
Well, you've got the thing is up here, you've got four new legislative leaders, two Republicans, two Democrats, who are leading their caucuses, their groups of legislators for the first time. Everyone's working really hard, but I think, as Anjanette pointed out in that story, even the Democrats can't seem to quite get 100% in agreement as to what their prime tax proposals are. The speaker has one that would levy an 8% tax on entertainment and admissions on virtually everything. And then the Senate Majority Leader Mo Dennis has a proposal that would up the payroll tax a little bit. So they're sort of
so there's disagreement between the two houses there, between the Democratic leadership and the Senate and the Assembly. Do you know, did they try to come to some consensus and they weren't unable to, or what happened there?
Well, they've definitely been in meetings, in private meetings with each other, sort of going over the details of their tax plans. But it's really different from last time. Last session in 2011, you had former Speaker John Oseguera and former Majority Leader and now Congressman Stephen Horsford come out in a joint press conference and announce their joint tax plan. This time you have each side doing something a little different. So that's just, I guess, a different approach.
Uh-huh. But at the same time, it's like Dennis, he defended the admissions tax when Speaker Kirkpatrick unveiled it. So it was kind of like he was defending it, but then he came out with his own thing. And so, I don't know, it's just kind of a strange process.
Yeah, in my conversations with the Majority Leader, with Mo Dennis, he said, you know, he supports it, but he doesn't voice really strong support for it. And he says there do need to be some exemptions, especially for some of those things that have really sort of made some people angry. The admissions tax on gyms and movies and these things that some people have said are just everyday sort of activities that would now be taxed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a political opportunity for him too. He could have, if not publicly, he could have at least made it plain that this legislation, if it passed the Assembly, was going to go into a desk drawer and it would never escape. But instead, he sort of, if he's like halfway in on it, I don't know. It's odd to me. What is the path to escape here? What is the potential end game?
Well, a lot of people up here are saying this whole thing is just going to peter out and end with the governor kind of winning, if you will. They've already
not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Yeah, sort of. They've already closed most of the budgets up here. It's really a procedural thing, but what it means is that the governor's recommendations have largely passed through the legislative process, and now we're really at the point where we have 2 weeks left, and they're just going to pass a bunch of bills. But
have they passed the budget, sort of cemented
in place now.
Did they close the K-12?
They did, yeah.
With the extra $300 million or whatever they wanted for English language learners and all-day kindergarten and all that?
Well, without that. They still want that, but that has to go through a bill.
Okay.
Because this is the funding formula. It's this really arcane process through which each district gets money. But all the extra stuff they want to do as far as class size reduction, ELL, full-day K, that's going to happen. If it does happen, it would happen outside of that.
And they'll pass something, but without the funding mechanism to go with it, and then they'll pass the funding mechanism separately.
Yeah, I think okay. That's how it's going to go.
Republicans could assent. They could conceivably vote for the. That does put the Republicans a little bit of a bind, right? Because they don't want to be seen as voting against that extra money for education. But at the same time, without a funding mechanism, presumably the governor would veto it.
Well, I think the Republicans are pretty happy to vote for the governor's budget because the governor has said, he's putting an extra, almost $500 million into the education budget this year. In his budget. Granted, some of that is just higher costs for higher enrollments, but there is, about $130-150 million worth of new money in there for education.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's where Republicans are sort of going to draw the line.
Okay, so they will vote against this new spending
that Democrats are proposing.
Right.
I think they've embraced the new spending that the governor has proposed, and all that new spending comes really from.
The improved economy, right?
The improved economy, some revisions in caseload, some pretty routine, regular stuff.
Mm-hmm. So it's so we should not. Okay, so then once the Democrats pass this new spending, they'll have to come up with a new funding mechanism, and I guess we're still trying to figure out how they will marry the assembly approach, which is this admissions tax on entertainment, and the Senate approach, which is an increase in the payroll tax, right? The MBT, the modified business tax.
Right.
And I suppose that they are working on some kind of compromise.
They're trying to. One Democrat put it this way to me the other day that. The governor's proposal sort of goes halfway and sort of halfway plugs the hole in the Titanic, and they still think this, this whole education system is sinking and failing and not doing well by the kids. So they want to put a lot more money into the education system than the governor's proposing. And it's just a matter of getting there, though. Most observers up here think that the tax proposals are pretty much dead on arrival. They require a two-thirds vote to pass, and so far they don't have that in either the Assembly or the Senate because they need some Republicans to sort of play Benedict Arnold and come over and join them and vote to raise taxes, which is a kind of a heavy lift.
Right. Seems highly unlikely. Although they do have their own tax plan, Republicans. That's to tax the mining industry.
That's the Senate.
Senate Republicans, but that's not going anywhere, really, is it either?
Yeah, that's a real long shot too, because it's just sitting in committee right now, and there's questions about whether it's even legal to put it on the ballot at this point, because it would go in theory, it would go up against this teachers union backed 2% margins tax on businesses
that the voters will see in 2014.
Right, that voters are going to see that no matter what. It's just a question of whether there'll be any alternative question to it on the ballot. So it would be sort of, pick one of the two on the ballot there. But
okay.
that's really hypothetical at this point. That doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And Andrew, let's talk about some of these individual bills. And so one thing they're trying to do is reform sex education, how it's delivered, or some might say modernize it, some might say take the responsibility out of parents' hands to teach their kids sex education. But what's that looking like? How's that shaping up? And is it likely to pass?
Well, it passed on the assembly side on a totally partisan vote, Democrats in favor, Republicans against. And it passed out of a Senate Education Committee, again, on a partisan vote. And that sex ed bill, it's just hung up in the Senate right now, waiting for a vote. And it's really controversial because you have Planned Parenthood involved and sort of behind the bill, and just talk of abortion and I guess fear that, you know, this was even raised in the committee that kindergartners would receive sex education. So there's a lot of interest in this. People are afraid of it passing in some cases. And then on the other side, there's some people who really think this is a good thing that'll help the state and help Nevada's teens get the information they need to make wise decisions.
And Nevada does have a high rate of teen pregnancy, right?
Yeah, so it's the fourth highest in the nation, and that's a statistic that Assemblyman David Bobzien, the sponsor of this bill, keeps citing. He says that if students have more knowledge, that they will engage in safer practices. And the bill does say, of course, that abstinence is the best way to avoid a pregnancy. So that's in the bill as well.
My understanding is that for the large school districts are already doing this kind of comprehensive sex education.
That's true. I, at least for Clark County, they do sex ed, I think, in 5th, 8th, and 10th grade, and they showed me a sheet the other day that has all of the things that the bill would mandate mm-hmm. that they teach, and mm-hmm. they do most of it. There's only a handful of things, for instance, talking about gender identities and how that plays in, and that aren't taught that they would have to teach under the bill. So at least for Clark County, the bill really doesn't have a huge change from what they're already
doing. Right, and that's most of the students in the state. And I understood the same was true in Washoe, so it seems like this sets up, I don't know, but it's probably, and I'm just speculating here, it's maybe some of this stuff is not being taught in the rural school districts. So the Democrats seem to have set up this kind of pointless fight with rural legislators and parents. I'm not sure I even understand why this is important if we're already doing it, but that's just my opinion, so we'll move on. NV Energy has a big omnibus piece of legislation that would move our energy source away from coal quicker than it had planned toward renewable energy. It would also lock in some rate increases, and I know you've been following this closely. One thing that was interesting last week, because I think that they scaled it back a little bit as a compromise, and our former colleague John Ralston said NV Energy, I don't know, but the headline was something like NV Energy compromises on its bill or something like that. I love that we just, you know, we have no illusions about whose bill this is.
Yeah.
But talk about that legislation a little bit and its progress and what its prospects are. I know it got a boost last week from the governor and the Republican governor and Democratic Majority Leader Harry Reid sent out a joint press release on it.
Right. So this is one of the big bills up here at the legislature. It has the potential to affect probably everyone listening right now, and everyone...
All 130 of you.
Yeah. Everyone who pays a utility bill. So I guess the first thing to say is that they don't need a bill for this. They were planning to get out of coal already. They have to go to the PUC with a plan in August. But they brought this to say they were going to get rid of coal earlier. It's a big headache for them. They're facing a lawsuit from the Moapa Band of Paiute to, say, the coal plant. Reed Gardner down in Clark County is killing them. They're facing increased regulations from potential increased regulations from the Obama administration, and they have an expensive retrofit coming up for the coal plant. So they say, just why not get out of it early? And it's sort of a quid pro quo, this for that sort of trade. If they get out of coal early, they want to be in charge of what they build in replacement for that, which is right now a mix of renewables and natural gas or perhaps some other kind of generation. But you're right in pointing out that there is a considerable coalition behind this now with the compromise that was reached. Harry Reid, Governor Sandoval, the gaming industry. Looks like this will probably go through with that kind of coalition behind it.
The Public Utilities Commission took a rather unusual step by warning legislators about the consequences of this bill, which would, to some degree, tie the PUC's hands a bit. Talk about that.
Yeah, they responded to the second version of the bill and said that this would basically, as you said, tie their hands and only have sort of a regulatory regime that would just be a rubber stamp approval system more than anything comprehensive or meaningful. But the third version of the bill does have, it puts back some oversight for the PUC, and I think it does address some of their concerns. They still have a few concerns with the bill, but I think that the utilities tried to scale back from their original plan, and that they're now planning to build less and have a little bit more oversight.
Mm-hmm.
But there are still going to be rate increases for utility customers, for everyone who pays a bill, just perhaps not to the tune of what they might originally have been.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, because it seemed to me that the original bill, they really wanted to take regulatory power out of the hands of the PUC, which they have a harder time controlling, and put it in the hands of the legislature, which they can control much better. So that was a big concern of mine. But you think some of that they have allayed my concerns properly, you think?
So some of them. There's still going to be rate increases. And the main PUC objection at the latest hearing was just that they would have a rate mitigation, so they'd cap rate increases at 5%. But then, if the real
5% per year
rate increase was, yeah,
okay.
But they'd get to collect interest on rate increases above that. So
who would collect interest on
that? The utility would. So in the long run, you do end up paying a little bit more because they collect interest over time on some of that. But on the other end, though, there's the supporters of the bill say this is a good move. It's ultimately going to be less costly to get out of coal now and invest in renewable energy now.
But we don't actually know. I mean, do we know what the rate increases are going to amount to?
No, we don't.
Okay, well, that sounds
there's
ominous. I'm glad I'm leaving that. All right, let's move on, Tovin.
And so, you know, one thing I've been covered also is the driver's license for, I guess, immigrants, those who can't produce some of the required documents that you need. So, obviously, it is targeting the immigrant community. Hispanics here, organizers here in Vegas, have really been on top of this and rallying behind it. I was wondering, Mo Dennis has been sort of shepherding this through the Senate. It got out of Transportation Committee. If Mo doesn't get this passed, it would sort of be a big loss for him, right? So he's taken sort of personal responsibility for getting this law through, right?
Yeah. This is one of his big bills. He really wants to see it through. But it is kind of controversial. You have some people who say, you know, that this is just a handout to a population that shouldn't be having drivers, any sort of driver's license or a privilege card, as they call it. So it's been hung up in committee, and you know, we're down to the last 2 weeks here. So that, but that's not unusual. There's tons of bills that are just sort of sitting there. Perhaps they're bargaining chips, or legislators are maybe playing games. I don't know about this particular one, but it seemed to be stalled a little bit. Certainly hasn't moved as fast as some of the other bills.
What about the argument that, you know, this would make our roads safer, more people would have access to insurance, and there'd be less, fewer hit and runs, that type of thing? I mean, is that gaining any traction with the early opponents?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the argument that the supporters are making, is that you have some, that everyone has an interest in this, so that more motorists are who are on the road are insured. So if you hit them or if they hit you, then there's two parties with insurance there, and that's just better for everybody. So that argument is gaining traction, and you do have some Republicans in support of the Democratic proposal.
Let's move through a couple other hot button issues this session. Pot dispensaries, it's also trapped in a money committee, right? This is for medical marijuana.
Yeah, that's still over in the Senate Finance Committee. So that's stuck on the Senate side. It still needs to pass the Assembly side. That one has bipartisan support from Republicans and Democrats who say that this is basically a way to help people exercise their constitutional right, because voters, I think in 98 and 2000, approved a ballot measure to amend the Constitution to allow for medical marijuana. But they argue that the laws in place don't really allow people to easily access that medical marijuana. You have to grow your own at home, and you can't get the seeds. So it makes the current law, they feel, is kind of broken. But as to if a solution gets through the process, it's got a ways to go and not much time to approve this thing.
Let me detour just for a second here. I mean, and both those bills we talked about, driver's privileges for undocumented immigrants and the pot dispensaries, I mean, both of them have some bipartisan support. I don't understand what the holdup is. Are they just... I don't understand. Why are they not moving this legislation?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure on both those proposals what specifically is holding them up. They had a hearing on the dispensaries, on the medical marijuana dispensaries bill last week, and I talked to the chair of that committee, and she said it might move this week. I think there's still some lingering concern there that among legislators, just because it is talking about marijuana, a drug that's still legal at the federal level, whether they really want to pass this thing or not. So there might be some heartburn there. And it is coming from one of the more liberal Democratic senators who, you know, he took a tour to Arizona to see some dispensaries.
He expressed his admiration for the pot
this
there.
Is the best bud I've ever seen.
Actual quote.
Right.
All right, so, okay. How about, let's talk about, has anyone emerged as particularly influential up there? I mean, who are, as we wind this down, as you say, and it peters out anonymously, who up there is, who's a player up there? I mean, other than the leadership.
Yeah, the leadership definitely, that's, of course, you know, they're going to be really powerful in the end of this thing. But I think the both the Assembly and Senate have these money committees that decide all the bills that have any money attached to them, which, of course, are the tax bills, a lot of the important bills. So you have the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, Maggie Carlton from Las Vegas, and the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, Debbie Smith from Sparks up here in Northern Nevada. I think they sort of become important at the end of this because they're the ones who can either hold up a bill or let it go, and a lot of the important bills are in their committees. at the end of session. So they're probably going to play a bit of that sized role in the process as it winds down.
I think I read Ralston had something about the Democratic caucus on the assembly side voting on leadership in the last week or so.
They had an informal meeting just to sort of divvy up responsibilities among their caucus. So not really any official position, but more of sort of an internal thing, I guess.
Was that a savvy move on Kirkpatrick's part to have everyone show their hand while the session is still going on and she has the gavel in her hand to sort of cut off at the pass any potential for a caucus revolt? Because if I'm in that caucus, I'm organizing a coup because this session is a failure and she has forced us, or she plans, maybe she'll think better of it. She plans on forcing us to take this terrible vote on this movie tax. What is there any kind of a palace intrigue that you're detecting?
Well, I think the Assembly Democratic Caucus is it's the biggest caucus. So I first of all, the Assembly is a bigger body than the Senate, and Democrats have the majority in the Assembly. So there's just there's more cats to herd, if you will. So I think there's more opportunity there for individual opinions to conflict. But the Speaker's done a pretty good job in managing our caucus and making sure that everyone's sort of in line and unified as this thing shuts down. I won't speak to the wisdom of bringing up the entertainment and admissions tax for a vote, but there's been some chatter that, like you said, the movies and those sort of more popular things might get exempted out, although the whole point of her bill was to have no exemptions. So,
right, we're gonna clean it up, is what they said, right? Yeah, until we weren't. Okay. Now, I mean, on that same issue, are Democrats do they privately express concern about the session, the way it's winding down, about tough votes, about 2014?
Some of them have privately said a few things that they're concerned about some of the tax proposals. But I don't know that anyone is talking. Of course, people are concerned about their re-election chances, but that hasn't been really the focus of any private conversations I've had. Although that chatter certainly is out there about how in the final weeks of the session, both Republicans and Democrats can sort of position themselves for looking good in 2014 as they run for re-election.
All right. Well, we want to thank our man in Carson, Andrew Doman, for Sun Reporter, for joining us. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, guys.
Our producer is Steven Zeller. My co-host is Tovin Lapan. I'm J. Patrick Kulik, and you've been listening to KUNV 91.5 Neon Eden. Join us next week.